This segment of the Voice of Alabama Politics is brought to you by the Alabama Rural Broadband Coalition.
Coming up next on the Voice of Alabama Politics, our special guest is Nathaniel Ledbetter, Speaker of the House nominee. Also, Mo Brooks is a ringleader. And Representative David Cole, is he a prevaricator? We'll find out.
You're a disgrace in your varmints. You're one of the lowest members of the food chain, and you'll probably be replaced by the rat.
Ooh, that's harsh. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to the Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and our guest today is Nathaniel Ledbetter, the Speaker of the House nominee. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be with you today.
Good to have you. You know, you and I over the years have had plenty of good conversations.
Wow.
And I'm very, very pleased that you're the speaker.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Bill, very much.
I know we keep calling you nominee, but due to the fact that the Republicans have a supermajority and you have a good relationship with the Democrats as well, your speakership is certainly assured, I believe.
Well, we got to go through the process. We're looking forward to January the 10th, but I feel good about where we're at. And certainly I'm humbled to get the vote that we got from our caucus. And like you said, we have a very good working relationship with both sides. So I've worked with the minority side for the last 6 years, and Leader Daniels and I are friends, and we'll work through some tough issues, and I think that's our job, try to make the process smoother.
Sure. You know, you're the second Speaker of the House in the last 12 years. You're replacing Mac McCutcheon, who is retiring with a great career in public service. How do you think that your leadership will be in the chamber, not in opposition to how his was, but just what's your leadership style?
Yeah, I think, first of all, let me say Mac McCutcheon did an outstanding job and probably one of the best men I've ever known, and a great friend of mine and yours both.
Yeah, of course.
And I think everybody's leadership is different. You know, I feel like I had a chance to serve under him and served under Hubbard. And my leadership's probably in the middle of those two.
Right.
I'd say that's where we're at. Mac was, sometimes he wanted to make sure the process worked for a long time.
Yeah.
But that was just his style and his skill, and he was successful doing that. I think ours will be different to that fact of, you know, trying to get the process where everybody will be satisfied and try to make it to where the memberships enjoy being there and try to figured out where it's best for everybody. I mean, it's a learning curve. I remember very well when I was on the city council in our small town and moved up to mayor. I'd been on the council for 12 years, and I thought, this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
Until I went in the office and had to do the job, and it was totally different from what I'd seen on the outside. And I know that's going to be some of that here. You know,
sure.
We've already experienced some of that. But Mac did such a good job, he made it seem kind of effortless. So we got work to do. We look forward to it.
Well, he's a good man, no doubt about it. We're also looking forward to seeing you in that position. One of the things, and you know, we've talked about this before, is the state, because of COVID, was given some $2.1 billion in various tranches. Now we have more of that ARPA money to spend, and that's going to be a big priority, right? How to spend that money.
Yeah, and I met with the governor Friday, and we went over a lot of the issues. And of course, ARPA funding, as you can imagine, is one of them. And I think one of her charges that she had given to us on the first tranche was, let's make investments in our state. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure that it's not a one-time spend. Make sure it's going to be something that's going to be here for the long haul for the
right.
People of our state. And I think, all in all, we did that. And I believe you'll see more of that. I think this tranche will be a little bit more covenant by the Treasury Department. I mean, I think it'll be limited more than what our last one was. We'll probably see more in sewer and water. We'll probably see more in hospital and nursing homes. We'll probably see more in broadband. You know, as you know, in our world today, broadband's like electricity was in the 40s.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, try to live without it.
Yeah, you can't do it. And you know that in your business, and especially going through COVID like we had and having to use it in schools and business having to stay at home and use it. And I know y'all work from your home.
Sure,
and
sure.
It allowed you to do that because you had good access.
Right.
But we're not that fortunate all over the state. So I think that's a priority we've got to continue to push.
Well, no doubt about that. The other thing that I know is a paramount concern, not only to law enforcement, but family members and folks around the state, is this fentanyl crisis that we have. You know, law enforcement recent survey said it is more dangerous than the methamphetamine.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's no question about that. It's become an epidemic in our state.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you know, this what used to be the assistant chief for the city of Birmingham's in our house, and he and I talked just the other day, and he said deaths in the Jefferson County area is up over 400% from fentanyl. So I think we've got to address it. We've got to let people know if you bring fentanyl into the state of Alabama, you're going to go away for a long time.
Yeah.
And make it where they don't want to bring it into our state. I think they're lacing it with other products to try to make it expand and go further.
Right.
And I know in my rural area, it's caused death to young people. I mean, it's become a killer to our youth, and it's something we've got to address.
Other than, you know, working with law enforcement, are there any other avenues that the state can take where you can address this human toll? I'm trying to read something that says it's beyond just, are we going to punish the dealers? How do we help folks?
No, I think you're right. I think we've got to do that. And, you know, in the process that we've been working on for, I guess, 3 or 4 years now is, I think some of it goes in what we do with mental health and trying to evaluate those people. Is the drug use because of mental health? Is it because they get in a situation where they can't make sense out of reality? And there is some of that. And I think we do have to. It's a two-part equation, and I totally agree. I think first we got to make sure that we make it strict enough that people don't want to bring it in our state, and then we got to help those that had problems with it.
It is epidemic from what we can see, and pretty much these days no family has been without that. No family I know has not been touched by some portion of the drug crisis.
And like we were talking about, I know one of the guy that lives there in my hometown, you know, his son, fine young man, grew up, just gotten, I don't know, they really got involved with the wrong people, that he took a pill that had it laced in it. Wow. At 21 years old, you know, you don't expect that to happen.
Yeah.
It happened to him, and you know, he won't see his son grow up. So that's not out of normal now for the fentanyl crisis.
Right.
That's across our state, and that's why we've got to address it.
Well, I want to talk to you about some more issues. Do you have time to stay around a little
bit? Absolutely.
All right, appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Speed is one of the biggest factors in a fatal car crash. Your car stops, but your body does not stop at the same time. Your body keeps going, you know, and that could be running into your seatbelt, that could be hitting the airbag. Something has to stop it, and unfortunately, it's something very hard.
There have been times that we've come upon accidents where if people weren't speeding, they'd probably still be alive today.
It's truly dangerous, and it puts everybody at risk.
There's just no point to it.
This kind of stuff has got to stop.
My dog Jupiter is frightened when I climb too high, the owl said.
Check for monsters, Daddy.
I did, honey. There are no monsters. You're perfectly safe.
Protect yourself and those you love. Vaccinate now.
This segment of The Voice of Alabama Politics is brought to you by the Alabama Rural Broadband Coalition.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Our special guest today is Speaker of the House nominee, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here, as always.
You know, we were talking before we went on the air about the Port of Mobile.
Yes.
And it is such a treasure in the state. I often refer to the Port of Mobile as Alabama's front porch. You know, it's a place where you get to see really some beautiful things about Alabama. And it is such a moneymaker. I mean, it is such a thriving interest. And I think few people understand how much we can actually do at the port. And I know this is a concern of yours, that we not only grow the port, but bring more industry into the port. I mean, it's doing great this year and last year.
It is. You know, the port has grown some 40% in the last couple of years.
Wow.
I agree with you. It's almost like Alabama's front porch.
Yeah.
It affects all of us across the state, from North Alabama to Central Alabama and to the Port of Mobile. And that was one thing. As Speaker, we're going to create a new committee that is Port and Inland Waterways, because I don't know if you knew it or not, but Alabama's got over 10% of all the fresh water in the United States. I mean, we were truly blessed. We're on the cusp of a lot of great things with our waterways and ports. But we got not only the Port of Mobile, and we got the Port of Huntsville, we got the Port of Birmingham, and now they're building a port here in Montgomery, along with the Tennessee Tombigbee Waterway, and then having that much of a natural resource. It's amazing that the good Lord has blessed us with that. And with everything that's happening on the West Coast and the lack of water there, a lot of the tech companies are beginning to look elsewhere. So I think Alabama is certainly in a position that we can take advantage of that. And, you know, from my standpoint, in North Alabama, you and I were talking off the air about being able to visit and see the blast freezers that they've got down there. So we have poultry products coming from North Alabama that's shipped through the port. You know, Alabama, a lot of the products, being timber and coal, goes through the Port of Mobile. And I think we're just opening it up. And by creating the committee, I think we'll be able to offer some incentives for some of these companies. As you know, Alabama's the second largest automobile producing company in our producing industry in the country. And we don't ship any automobiles out of Mobile Bay yet.
I know, and that does not make any sense, but that should turn around.
I think it will. I mean, some of those companies all have contractual agreements for the Savannah port, and I think we will see that change. And if we can get our committee put together and offer those incentives, which will, you know, be paid back into the state many times over. I'd read a report recently where Mobile Bay brings in over $85 billion of commerce to our state.
Wow.
And I think we're just seeing the beginning, to be honest with you.
Well, as far as the intercoastal waterways, will there be more infrastructure investment into helping develop those?
Yeah, I think one of the things, that is a possibility. The other thing is, you know, we've had the Tennessee Tombigbee for a number of years. I don't think we've ever fully used it to the ability that we could.
Right.
And I firmly believe that putting the committee together and start looking at what our resources are here in Alabama will give us the opportunity to use the facilities we already have.
Okay.
And I think it gives us a platform to be able to use those and go forward.
You know, economic development is big on everyone's mind that pays attention to business.
That's right.
We're all you're a business owner.
That's right.
Business owner. I'm always concerned about what can we do to improve the fortunes of business in our state, to attract good business, and to get our businesses to be more prosperous. Could you talk a minute about how what you're seeing we need to do as far as economic development? I know there's a number of bills that have to be renewed.
That's right. The Alabama Jobs Act will be renewed. That'll be probably one of the first pieces of legislation we'll take up when the session begins. And I think it's so important to our state. If you look at what's happened just over the past few years, because I think a lot of it's got to do with the Jobs Act and the way that it's implemented. You know, we've created over 65,000 jobs and added over $40 billion in industry into our state. And I think that has proven itself.
Right.
You know, for companies, small and large, it's in business. I think that's a big deal because, you know, the more people that come in the state, the more people uses your company or more people uses our company, whatever. But, I mean, I just think creating those jobs, good jobs, high-paying jobs, it makes us stronger as a state. And I think if you look over the last few years, we've been blessed. I think... the economy in Alabama's grown at a pace I've never seen in my lifetime.
Oh, no, it's unbelievable. It's, you know, the job rate, the people that want a job can have a job.
That's
is pretty amazing.
Yeah, growing up in Alabama, and which I know you've been here a long time,
yeah.
and seeing a lot of things change, but growing up in Alabama, I never in my lifetime thought I could sit on a show like this today and say, you know, we're number two in producing automobiles.
Right.
We're number one in commercial airlines.
Right.
And we're in the top five in shipbuilding. And that's in Alabama.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, over the last few years, and I think the Alabama Jobs Act, some of those incentives that we put forth with those has made a big difference.
And you know, we certainly followed that with our news coverage, and we've seen it. We've seen this happen. And I think, you know, Senator Richard Shelby has done a lot for that. Governor Ivey has done
absolutely.
A lot for that.
Absolutely.
We're going to miss Senator Shelby, but we'll still have Governor Ivey, and we'll have Tommy Tuberville and Katie Britt in the Senate. I think they'll do a good job for us.
I do, too. I'm excited. Of course, Coach Tuberville and Katie both are good friends and have worked with both of them. Of course, you know I was Coach Tuberville's co-chairman for his campaign when he ran, and Katie worked really closely with her with the BCA, and I'm excited. I mean, I think they both have their pluses, and Katie's just a fireball. I think she is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And as much as I hate to see Senator Shelby go, and what he's done for our state will never be repeated, probably.
Right.
I'm also excited to see what Katie can do and what she brings to the table.
Always great to see what the next generation is going to be able to accomplish, and if anybody can do it, Katie can.
Absolutely.
Any last thoughts?
You know, I think going into the session, of course, we're excited in the new role. We've got had opportunity to put a good staff together. I think we got good committee chairs. We've got good people we're serving with. And certainly look forward to continuing our success that the state's had. And I'm proud of things we've accomplished. I know we got work to do. And there's other things that we can certainly address, and we'll look forward to doing that. But I appreciate the opportunity you having me on.
Well, you're always welcome. We appreciate having you.
Thanks, sir.
And good luck.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Our special guest, Nathaniel Ledbetter, Speaker of the House nominee. We'll be right back.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread and kissed them all soundly.
Lights out.
Good night.
And put them to bed. Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org.
Throughout my career, I've seen many crashes, and a lot of the fatalities are from people who haven't worn their seatbelt.
Cars have rolled over multiple times.
I've had people end up in lakes, ravines. I've been looking for people in the woods for a couple hours before.
Usually just about every bone in their body is broken, their organs have ruptured, and typically they die.
You want to save a life? Just simply click a button and put the seatbelt on.
Seatbelts really do save lives.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Welcome, Josh. Welcome, Susan.
Hi.
Speaker's hello, hello, how are y'all?
Good, how are you?
Yeah,
the speaker's interview went really well.
Yeah, it was nice to have Speaker Ledbetter on. Mm-hmm. We look forward to working with him. Be interesting.
Hey, it took up all my talking time, so, you know, I've got a bone to pick.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, when don't you, Josh? When don't you?
It's true.
You know, this thing up in District 10, David Cole, Representative David Cole, I think a preponderance of the evidence, as our lawyer friends say, would say that he doesn't live in that district, that he never lived in that district, and that he does not live in that district. And yet, this is sort of becoming a legal challenge now. And so we've got a Republican lawmaker who's been sworn in who doesn't appear to live in the district. One of the arguments is that it's not a court issue. Another argument is that it is. Josh, you've been covering this. Break it down for us.
Yeah, it's, you know, and honestly, I think just from talking to the attorneys and the people kind of involved in this, or and the neutral observers, I guess I should say, it kind of seems as though it's kind of half in and half out, that you must file the challenge within the local circuit court, that there is a process that the legislature has established for taking written depositions, and then that information is transferred over to the legislature to handle. And so I think that's kind of where we are now. There's going to be a hearing, I believe Monday, on the motion to dismiss, and we'll see what the judge decides. But I would kind of be surprised if it's dismissed just out of hand and turned completely over to the legislature. I do believe that there's a process that they have to go through.
Now, Susan, you have, you know, let's go with the fact that it doesn't appear he lives in the district, but it also appears that by some standards, the legislature itself may be able to make the decision on whether he cheated fairly or just cheated, and that they should dump him. You don't seem to have much faith that they would dump him.
I really don't. Just because, first of all, they don't like paperwork. Let's just be honest. They don't even read the bills they have. But it's kind of a, you know, in that slot is a bit of a good old boy club. Well, you got here, you know, it's okay. And I just don't think they're really going to turn him away and say, you know, this is, you don't qualify for this, even though he clearly does not qualify in that district. I just don't think they will.
Josh, the word around the campfire is if they can find any reason to throw this guy under the bus, he's under both the front and the rear axles.
Yeah, you know, it's been kind of odd. The word that I've heard from, you know, Republicans actually is that if this thing comes about to them, that he doesn't have a lot of chances to maintain that seat, just because. You know, I think a lot of it is he's kind of an unknown. He doesn't have a lot of those friends in Montgomery that would take the hit for this. And I think there's been kind of a public outcry because, let's be honest, like you said, it's from all appearances, it's fairly obvious that he doesn't live in the district. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's and he's making very little effort outside of, you know, shipping out some leases that they put together to move or to get himself into the district. And so I just, you know, I think that a lot of people have taken a look at it and said, look, we're, you know, this is going to be a headache. And I think that it ultimately, if they have to start taking depositions, I think he's going to have some real problems.
Well, you know, you have to wonder if his neighbor that he was renting rooms out from his house would testify, oh, yeah, that dude, he moved in from his 4-bedroom house into my 4-bedroom house.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
all want to live like this. That's
perjury. Perjury is a big word.
Yeah, and yeah. He's not that. There's no way that the guy is going to risk perjury over this nonsense.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. You know, we talk about voter integrity. You know, when a guy, if he did, mm-hmm. cheated mm-hmm. to get elected, I don't think we want him here. You know, but yeah. We'll see. Hey, you know, talking about a guy who we just don't want here anymore.
God, I wish we could stop talking about it.
The latest revelation on Mo Brooks came from emails that were sent to mm-hmm. Donald Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Some 34 Republican lawmakers had sent hundreds of emails to Mark Meadows in an attempt to overturn the elections mm-hmm. and to use January 6th as a pretext to overturn the election. And all the way to the extent, Josh, as you've reported, to encourage the president to declare martial law. Now, I think the only thing they're embarrassed about here is that the dude could not spell martial,
yeah.
law. I think that's the only thing they regret.
Well, I think they were actually talking about Steve Marshall Law, which would be fitting in this regard, as it would be no law at all. And so, you know, this is another embarrassment for the state, although it seemed as though Mo Brooks was quite proud of this when Talking Points Memo, which are the people that published the latest round of text messages between Mark Meadows and a lot of the congressional leaders on the Republican side, and you know, kind of highlighted just how off the rails insane this got at that point. And I mean, it was, I called it in a column. It was like looking at the inner workings of a cult. And I mean, the disillusion and the just complete fantasy world that they seem to be living in at that time. And then in the months since this happened, where they were one martial law, they were fake electors. They put up fake electors. I mean, why? We very rarely talk about this. These people went out and recruited fake people to be the electors from these states.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just to subvert. It's all in an effort to subvert a free and fair election in which study after study and audit after audit has shown there was little, if any, fraud.
And Trump's political advisor, Jason Miller, said that Mo Brooks was the ringleader.
Ringleader. It says it right here. Representative Mo Brooks' office says he seems to be the ringleader on January 6th deal. They say he will have as many as 50 members on board for January 6th.
So
he was up to his ears in that.
The ringleader for a coup. Yeah. And when he was asked about it, he was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm proud of that. You know, he's proud of that.
Well, listen, in his defense, in a dozen years in Congress, it's the only thing he's led, you know? I mean, he hadn't done anything else. He couldn't shepherd through a single piece of legislation in 12 years. So, yeah, no. I guess he is proud.
No, he did not do anything in 12 years, which is, you know, kind of what we expect from our lawmakers sometimes. Just don't do anything.
Right.
Just better that way. But, Josh, there just seems to be no embarrassment. And no changing course, you know, that's the scary thing. And, you know, it seems like, you know, people are not embarrassed by Mo Brooks. They're not embarrassed by Alabama's role. But you look at a man like we just had Nathaniel Ledbetter on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't imagine a guy like that being crazy like Mo Brooks. I mean,
no, not at all.
So this is what our state representatives look like as opposed to some of our other people.
No, but, you know, it's you're right. And you know, I think that Nathaniel Ledbetter is probably a good and decent guy. But, you know, this has tainted the entirety of that party because it's backed people like Ledbetter and others into this corner now where they can't simply say the truth. You know, that, I mean, there are very few Republicans that have been willing to come out and say, what are you talking about? You know, this is nonsense. I mean, what, you got Mitt Romney, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger. There's hardly anybody that you can say.
Well, anyway, we're going to have to leave it right there. You've said it. We've said it. You know it. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.